The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bersa Goodness.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. For the majority of this show, we spoke with Sasha and Igor, who live in Prague, about Operation Phoenix, which began in April 2015 when the police of the Czech Republic commenced an operation against the anarchist, anti-authoritarian, and animal liberation movements. During the course of this wave of oppression, there were a number of house raids during which equipment was confiscated, and it has since come to light that agent provocateurs were used heavily in the arrests which took place. In this interview, we talk about how anarchists in Prague are handling this scrutiny, as well as ways to combat divide and conquer tactics used by the cops, how the media is weaponized against anarchists, and what someone might do about these things. For more information on this and for sending support, visit antifenix.noblogs.org, which is antifenix.noblogs.org.
We love to extend a loving thank you to the folks who attended and put on the benefit for The Final Straw last night at the auditorium, including the staff of that place, Ashley for putting the show together, the bands being Ashura, Autark, Desperate Measures, and La Cremosa, Asheville FM staff who tabled, Asheville Anti-Racism, and the lovely faces who attended. The show was a smash-bang success. But first, here's an announcement from the North American Anarchist Black Cross Network. In February 2017, political prisoner Zolo Azania will finally be released from prison. He will have served 35 years, 27 were on death row. During his final year inside, Zolo wants to participate in Indiana Department of Corrections, IDOC, work release program. As Zolo says, quote, "I want to be moved into some type of viable program so that I can gain additional life skills in preparation for my reentry into the community," unquote. The IDOC should grant work release to Zolo based on the person he is today, his record of good behavior, his re-entry needs, and Indiana's commitment to rehabilitation. However, the IDOC has denied work release for Zolo, apparently based on the fact that he was convicted for murder 34 years ago. The IDOC's denial of access to work release for Zolo is unfair and unwarranted. It's suggested that you call, if you're interested, email, or write to the Commissioner Bruce Lemon, Indiana, Department of Corrections, and say, 1. Offer Zolo the kind of reentry plan he deserves, work release, WR. 2. After 34 years, Zolo needs WR to gain skills and money necessary for reentry. 3. Zolo is a model prisoner and has shown a commitment to better himself. 4. Evaluate Zolo based on who he is today, not on his 34-year-old conviction. Commissioner Bruce Lemon can be reached at 317-232-5711. That's 317-232-5711. Or written at 302 West Washington Street, room E-334, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46201. Or emailed at blemon at idoc.in.gov. To find out more information about the issue and for access to a sample letter to send to Commissioner Bruce Lemon, you can visit Zolo Azania, that's ZOLOAZANIA.org. And if you like, you can call the number 773-425-6716. The following is an excerpt entitled "The Last of NATO 3 May Die in Prison from Huntington's Disease" by Kevin Gastola from Shadowproof. Jared Chase is the last member of the NATO 3 who remains in prison. Chase suffers from Huntington's disease and faces additional charges for an alleged aggravated battery against a prison guard. He's set to go on trial in April. If convicted, there's a significant chance that Chase will die in prison because of how his imprisonment has compounded the effect of his neurodegenerative disease. In May 2012, Chicago hosted the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, meeting to discuss policies in the Afghanistan war. A number of activists traveled to the city to protest NATO, including Chase, Brian Jacob Church, and Brent Betterly. They became known as the NATO 3 after they were targeted by undercover Chicago police and arrested on May 16th. The state of Illinois accused them, these being the NATO 3, of making explosives. The Illinois State's Attorney's Office quickly labeled the young men as terrorists in a criminal complaint and charged them with state terrorism offenses. On February 7, 2014, after a lengthy trial in which the key role of undercover cops became even more apparent, the jury acquitted the NATO 3 of all terrorism charges, but all were found guilty of arson-related offenses and mob action charges. In April 2014, the judge sentenced Church to 5 years in prison, Betterly to 6 years, and Chase to 8 years for arson offenses. The judge allowed prosecutors to present evidence against Chase related to the alleged aggravated battery incident involving the spraying of urine and feces on a guard, even though the state intended to pursue a separate trial. Betterly, who was released from prison in April 2015, was last with Chase while they were beat up by guards during the arrival at Statesville Prison Receiving Center. After sentencing, they were put on the same bus and moved to the prison. Guards at the Illinois Department of Corrections awaited their arrival, which resulted in a, quote, pretty violent interaction, unquote, according to Betterly. During the recent pretrial hearing on December 7, 2015, Chase showed up to court with a black eye and a swollen face. Betterly said he's lost a considerable amount of weight, perhaps 50 pounds. Supporters are concerned about his health. Quote, he's dying before my eyes. That's not an embellishment at all, unquote, Betterly declared. Quote, the charge he carries now, it carries a minimum of 3 years. He won't survive it, unquote. Betterly noted that the prisons are not capable of taking care of diseases that are generally serious but treatable. A disease like Huntington's is, quote, probably something they don't encounter much. They completely have no idea how to care for somebody with Huntington's. They're not equipped to do it. He'll die. If he's found guilty and sentenced to even the minimum, he won't make it. That's my opinion, unquote. Chase is involved in solitary confinement at the Pontiac Correctional Center, a facility where a number of violent and or mentally ill inmates are incarcerated. State prosecutors allege that on October 4, 2013, Chase sprayed, quote, human waste, unquote, on a Cook County prison guard, Officer Trevor Hapanionek. He was charged with four different charges for one alleged act. Multiple Cook County guards testified during sentencing about the basic details of what they claim happened on October 4th, but Dr. Kathleen Shannon, a neurologist who has assessed Chase, testified that his misconduct against guards was likely the result of Huntington's disease. Shannon informed the court the disease makes it difficult for a person to avoid outbursts. It makes one easily irritable and can lead to mania. On average, a person who develops the disease can die in 17 years. A person usually goes through multiple stages of disability until spending the final 8 years of their life in a nursing home or hospice care. It's hereditary. Chase's dad died from the disease, and according to Shannon's best estimate, the onset of Huntington's disease began in 2008. That would be 8 years ago. To read the rest of the article and find out ways to support Jared Chase and to get him the medical attention that he needs to save his life, check out the links at freethenato3.wordpress.com. And here's an update from the land occupation near the town of Notre-Dame-de-Lande in France called La ZAD, which is a long-running resistance against the building of an airport which would devastate the ecology of the area, destroy farmland, and evict many long-term residents. This is specifically an update on the state of emergency which was declared and the call to action being requested. Here we have a statement read for us by a comrade in Asheville.
An update by our friends at the Zone à défendre, or ZAD, in Notre-Dame-des-Landes, Brittany, France. People continue to mobilize, and there is a big demonstration planned for February 27th and call-outs for decentralized action everywhere to call for an end to the airport project for once and for all. There is also a call for donations for legal fees. It seems that whatever decision is made will come from President Hollande. The new president of the region and the prime minister are vocal about their desire for a ZAD eviction, but have repeatedly implied that it's not their decision. The eviction attempt with military force in October of 2012 backfired in that it brought awareness of the struggle to the general public and made the state look both cruel and weak, through images of robocops dragging people from their homes, but also images of police running away from things being thrown at them or while being charged, and ultimately withdrawing. It seems that the state doesn't want to risk losing face again, especially as the quote-unquote socialist party is wildly unpopular, and it's a year away from a presidential election. So a legal eviction that makes it financially unsustainable for people to stay in their homes looks softer, but is just as violent. It would also not only separate and take some meaning from the movement, but leave the squatters more vulnerable to attack if the people living there are less diverse. That's why this trial is being resisted as much as would be a military-style eviction attempt, which may follow anyway. Note, the trial results were delivered January 25th, and the four farms are immediately evictable, while 8 of the 11 families have a delay until March 26th, at which point it's illegal to cut trees and thus start work on the project. Also, there are no daily fines given, so the legal responsibility is now on the government to evict by force. The farmers and many of the residents have declared their refusal to leave willingly. Here's what's been going on these past weeks. 2 weeks ago, on Saturday, January 9th, 20,000 cyclists and pedestrians took over the ring road in Nantes, leaving from six points and converging on a bridge that is a major axis of the region for a banquet. The demo was organized in 10 days to protest the eviction trial of families and farmers who live legally in the area since a long time, and supported by simultaneous actions in 40 other cities. If carried out, the legal eviction process would impose massive fines and seizure of land, homes, and livestock. A group of farmers, called Copain, decided to occupy the bridge with a group of around 500 supporters until they received a confirmation from the president that he would keep his engagements, taken in 2012 during the presidential election following an anti-airport hunger strike. The government's response was to send military police and ambulances as a threat tactic, and it was decided to pack down the camp and make a strategic retreat, whilst being watered with cannons and tear gas. Monday, January 11th, there were surprise blockades in 5 points around Nantes to continue to demand there be no evictions before the end of the legal appeals process against the airport. 80 tractors and several hundred people took part, and the blockades were mainly well received by the population. There's a communique saying, quote, "Imagine if there were actual evictions. Nobody would be able to go to work anymore," end quote. At the end of the day, as three farmers were going back to their farm for the 7 p.m. milking, they met a police blockade, which they passed around on the sidewalk. Further on, they met another police blockade, and some military police were lightly injured by the tractors as they tried to pass. The three were arrested and have trials at the end of February, where they risk up to 2 years in prison and to lose their driver's licenses, and their tractors have been impounded. Tuesday the 12th, an Operation Snail was proposed, where people drive really slowly on important axes of circulation to make a moving blockade. There are many actions, 9 different convoys in the region, plus communiques from 8 different cities where there were blockades and occupations of ring roads, police headquarters, and courthouses. 19 people are arrested and 19 cars impounded. There's a call out for donations and expropriations for legal fees and getting their cars back. Vinci, the airport contractor, builds pay parking lots and toll roads, so there are some actions to physically open the barriers and ask for donations to support the struggle from people who come through. Wednesday, January 13th, was the trial of the landowners and renters, with 2,000 to 3,000 people present, with some famous leftist politicians trying, as always, to recuperate the struggle. The decisions will be delivered on Monday, January 25th. Well over 20 solidarity actions happen across France, from roadblocks to tags to marches to farmers' unions rallies in the Basque Country. People are doing legal support and prepping for the demo. 40 farmers go to the vehicle impoundment to try to reclaim the tractors. Actions have continued almost every day all over the country. Last Saturday was a demonstration to block the nearby city of Rennes, and there have been blockades of other major cities. there has also been a major media push to both separate the ZAD occupation movement from the anti-airport movement and label the entirety and diversity of ZAD occupants as scary, foreign-born, black-clad monsters who are incapable of passing windows without breaking them. Some local right-wing people have made up a petition calling for the eviction of the ZAD, whether the airport project is canceled or not. Tomorrow, Monday, is the results of the trial, where the families and farmers find out if they are immediately evictable, if there is a delay, or if the trial is sent to another court to see if the trial is legal. The farms and families are now legally evictable, and a farmer group have demonstrated that they will encircle the farms and chain their tractors together if there is an eviction attempt. This weekend is a work weekend. In response to the call by the state for subcontractor offers to start work on the project, the ZAD has called for people to come together on our counter projects by building a collective climbing wall, a place to dry and store medicinal plants and do consultations, and pour a new concrete floor. Among the 30-some projects proposed for this weekend. This week, the city halls in Nantes and Rennes saw simultaneous image makeovers during demonstrations the night of the verdict. The hacker group Anonymous shut down access to the ruling Socialist Party website to protest the state of emergency and eviction trial results at Notre-Dame-des-Landes. Seven construction trucks from Eurovia, a subsidiary of Vinci, were burned in solidarity with the ZAD and against the state of emergency, and there were creative demonstrations across France. Rendezvous the 27th of February to call for an end to politicians dodging a clear answer and an end to the airport and the world that goes with it, for once and for all. More info can be found at zad.nadir.org.
And here is the interview with Sasha and Igor about Operation Phoenix. For coming on the air, the first question that I have is, would you introduce yourselves and describe a little bit about what you do?
Hello. First of all, thank you for inviting us. My name is Sasha, and I'm part of Czech Anarchist Black Cross. We mostly support prisoners and sharing knowledge now in like calmer time and trying to create stronger anti-repression network. And also in my anarchist life, I focus on other anarchist organizing and mostly building stronger international ties.
Hi, I'm Igor, and I'm being part of different anarchist collectives in the Czech Republic and Russia. And is it necessary to say about Phoenix now, like that I was charged and so on?
Yeah, that's actually the next question that I have, which is, would you talk about Phoenix and explain a little bit about what they are and your experiences with them?
So Operation Phoenix is something which is a police name for the biggest police crackdown against any social movement, this time against anarchist and animal liberation movement in Czech Republic. This wave of repression started just a few days before May Day 2015 with many raids in flats and a social center, confiscation of property, mostly like, you know, cameras, computers, cell phones, and arrest of dozens of people and many, many people being interrogated later during Operation Phoenix, which hasn't stopped yet. In the beginning, six people were accused of being a part of so-called group which was supposed to work on conspiracy and preparation of so-called a terrorist attack against the train with military equipment. And later, one person was accused of illegal arms possession. Three people are put in remand. And then later on, police revealed that at least two undercover agents were part of the group. And actually, they were the ones who, after gaining the trust, hiding bugs in a flat, they were the ones who brought the master plan of attacking the train with the firebombs. So there was, the whole thing was entrapment and provocation done by undercovers infiltrated in anarchist movement. The terrorism and entrapment happened first time in Czech Republic, although Nazis have killed several, like many people in last 25 years, they were never labeled as terrorists, as anarchists are after being entrapped by cops and just for preparation, not for anything. They didn't hurt anyone. And later in June 2015, Igor, who is here with us, was arrested and sent to custody jail for a completed attack on a house of Minister of Defense by Molotov cocktails, and more accusations and interrogations have been ongoing since the beginning of Phoenix till now. By now, 8 people pending trial, and one of them is still in remand.
Mm. Operation Phoenix shows some similar signs and marks with other similar police operations in Europe. For example, Ternak from France, in France, and Pandora, and other operations in Spain and so on. They have like similar signs and marks in the way how it's going. They have many common, like mostly in the fact that everything starts with a big police show, with arresting many people and like charging people with some crazy things. And now after 2 or 3 years, after people like being in custody for some small or big time, then it just falls apart, and it ends with some small insignificant charges like some graffitis or damage on the private
property destruction, stuff like that. Yeah. Do you see that the diminishment of the charges, like you? People getting charged with insignificant stuff, do you see that happening sooner rather than later, or is that still a long way away?
It's like happening rather later, like later than this like cause starts. For example, police understand that like it's not going to be fine, like that they are not going to put these people in prison, and all affair is just falling apart. So they can just found some small thing like graffiti or something like that to charge with, and just to make affair, like just to get it to the court.
That sounds like a really rough thing to be going through. So what with all of the and it's also crazy that Nazis who are like basically a violent gang are not being charged in a similar way than anarchists are. I think that's a really important point.
In Czech, there was a repression wave against Nazis, but there was never stuff like terrorism and like that.
For sure.
I would just like to say about those tactics that what is usually happening, and in the very beginning, the police goal is to make big theater out of that and create big panic among, like, in a society. And then later the charges are usually not that big. And, you know, it somehow just disappears. The terrorism disappears. The charges disappears because they realize they have, like,
no basis.
Yeah, like the thing which you need to find to charge somebody. To prove you're right.
Probable cause or something like that, or whatever it is. It's not.
Yeah, that they don't have like enough good arguments for that. And but when after all of these years, when anarchism and anarchists are discredited and the movement is separated and it costs so much energy and so much money and so much like emotional energy as well, then you don't read in the newspaper anymore that police weren't right, that it was all just bullshit. You know, their goal is not to put few people for really long terms, really long sentences to prison, as it's happening in the US, for example, during the Green Scare and stuff. But the main goal is just like to discredit anarchism as itself and separate the movement, which unfortunately works much better than to charge some people with really big things.
Yeah, because people remember the panic and they remember all of the media scare and all of that stuff. And they don't remember the initial charges of like mild graffiti. And they just remember all of the agent provocateur bullshit.
Yeah, yes. And it's also how media works, because they're not going to say after a few months or years when it comes up that it was all just made up. Or it was all just like big scare made by police. They're not going to write an article about that. Big media go after sensation. So when it's like nationwide terrorism case, the very first one in like in domestic scale in Czech Republic. That's something to write about. But when a few months later you realize that one of the people who was charged with these things in the beginning or accused was just having a little bit more gunpowder than it's legal, and that somebody else, as Igor here, for example, had like totally good arguments of not being able to be on a place at the time of a crime, no one really writes about it anymore because it's not something to sell for media. So it's not like to say, hey, sorry, we wrote a little bit too much, or we are lying, or police saying sorry. That never happens.
Police never say sorry.
No, they do not. It's not what they do. Could you talk a little bit about how this targeted repression has affected the anarchists in Prague?
I think a lot of people got scared and much more paranoid, which is quite natural, at least in the beginning, and it's something we can work on. But the result of this fear was that many people turned their back to so-called terrorists, thinking that this will save their butts, which is sad because it's a label and language and narrative made by state and by authorities, by our enemies, and we definitely shouldn't fall into this narrative. And if we do turn our backs to those accused ones and thinking that we'll save ourselves by that, by distancing ourselves, I think in long term it's a big mistake because we just show the police that they can always use this narrative and these tactics because they know that we'll always cut the most radical part of anarchists or of our movement or animal liberation movement off, that we'll always turn our backs against them. And then we will fall in that narrative, and that's exactly what they want. And showing this just shows that it's a very successful method, and they can use this to oppress us group by group or individual by individual anytime they want.
Unfortunately, Operation Phoenix opened the way for some conflicts between different anarchist collectives here in Czech Republic.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, or would you like to let it rest?
What to say about that?
I think basically what happened is that some collectives which are more successful in shorter term goals and in a lot of like single issue and let's say demand based politics feel like they need a lot of popularity, and sometimes they would just cut off the more militant ones, which the behavior of the more militant groups or collectives is that they start to talk about the ones who cut them off or distance themselves as like a reformist one. So from the both sides, it's creating bigger and bigger gap in between the two, which is exactly what police wants the most, because we are only strong if we respect each other and see that the militant part of the movement is necessary for pushing the envelope and making the space for, let's say, the more social part of the movement and vice versa. The more militant part of the movement needs the more social one to argue for them in public spaces. But that is not happening from none of the sides. And that's much more worth it for police and for the authorities than having few people in prison for many, many years.
Some collectives even started charging each other with such things like not good enough security politic and the things like that.
So basically it just sounds like it fostered a lot of infighting and just name calling and like that. Is that right?
Yeah, the thing is to see a little bit of the background. The situation in Czech Republic is that I think anarchist or radical left, let's say, however most of the anarchists here don't see themselves as a part of any left, but it's one bigger movement, right? So this radical left anarchism leverage of us has been increasing in past, I don't know, 5 years. But also like new wave in Czech Republic is some like insurrectionism or anarcho-individualism and some groups bringing this sort of way of struggle and these tactics. And Operation Phoenix, like, their argument was that they are going after these criminals, these terrorists, these extremists in their language. You know, the people who put in fire police cars or toll gates, or ALF groups who release minks and then, like, do sabotages in a mink farms and stuff like that. But of course, no one of those who were entrapped was ever charged of anything which really did happen. And it's obvious that none of them has any connection to any of the groups which are just named. But as we were talking before, some people who feel like they want to be safer, especially in these times when we are all under focus, under big spotlight of police, they make sure that they have nothing in common with those, like, more militant or insurrectionist groups. There is the most known one, which is called the Network of Revolutionary Cells, which is basically something like Conspiracy Cells of Fire, just Czech version of it. And that spread the movement a lot for the people who would not very loud sort of understand why this group, this insurrection, is doing what they do, and people who very loudly, because it became very popular, distancing themselves and saying, no, these are not part of our movement, fuck them. And that makes the big gap, which is what police needs.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Igor and Sasha about Operation Phoenix and the anarchist response in Czech Republic. More after this musical break, where we'll hear Gattaca, which is a Czech anarchist blackened hardcore project with Workfare off their 2012 7-inch, released by Halo of Flies. You're listening to WSFM LP at 103.3 FM, and this is The Final Straw. I was wondering, since the media has been used to used as a weapon, basically, against anarchists, and I was wondering if you, in your opinion, what are some effective ways of combating that negative media representation, or what are some ways of dealing with it that y'all have found to be useful?
capturing buildings with media.
Yeah.
I think like the one of the most effective actions in this sphere was represented in Mexico by Zapatistas, and I would like to see some radio station captured by anarchists actually, but or some TV channel captured by anarchists. Yeah, I think I see this way like an effective way in like struggling with mass media.
I think what we at least have to do is to be very loud and stand on our ground and be loud in our narrative and not to pretend to be someone else just to gain the popularity and being like liked for something. We are not actually ourselves anymore. You know, some sexy looking group of activists seeking for popularity or stuff like that. I don't want to be part of that just so we feeling safer. And I think it refers a lot to the last question you put. Rather be ourselves and not to fall in the game of a media and their terms and their narratives and their language. Because we never can win on that field. And that's like the important thing about this division we are talking, that before we had known about it, the fact that the entire operation is based on entrapment, many people doubt if to support those accused ones, aka so-called terrorists, or if they should perhaps wait if they're gonna be guilty or not by the court and then to see if we will support them or not. And I would like to say loud that this shouldn't matter for us if to support them according if they are guilty or not, if they did through or wanted to through some Molotovs on a cargo train with military equipment or not. Because we definitely should not fall into this media discourse. And maybe somebody already heard it in US when I was talking about it, but for me the relevant questions are, and that's like the key questions, rather than if they were innocent or not, is what is military equipment used for? How many people would die if military equipment of a scale of one train was used in warfare? Who are the usual casualties and who profits from wars? Of course, media will always see this as unacceptable violence. But for us, anarchists, the main question should be not if it's violence or not, but how does such an act distribute power? And answering these questions, actually such a sabotage, it may save many lives and theoretically can't harm anyone if it's being done well. That's to me, you know, rather than following into if they really are guilty or not, or if it's violence or not, this is what I would think about.
It's always seemed to me that any rhetoric that is, you know, talking about guilt or non-guilt or violence or non-violence is just a way to build a weird kind of hysteria and a way to just derail any sort of political conversation or humanization of political agents or anything like that. So I agree. I think that's really solid. Perhaps you talked about support briefly, and you also mentioned that six people were jailed by Operation Fenix. And I was wondering if you would mind talking about the cases of, or if Igor, if you would want to talk about your situation and the situations of Martin and Peter. What are folks facing right now as far as like jail times or anything like that? And what I was wondering if you would also touch briefly on the conditions in prison that people were forced to deal with.
Yeah, I would like to say that we can speak about Fenix 4, but actually like those cases are like a bit separate, that we can say Fenix 3, which was like jailed with charges which were connected with Fenix, and then like I was jailed with thing which is officially not like directly connected with Fenix, but like everybody understands that this one big like part of repression. If speaking about like what what am I facing now? Now, when I was released from jail, I have...
On bail.
Yeah, I'm on a bail. I can't leave the country. I have some problems with visa. I have to do probation, or how to say that?
To visit probation officials.
To visit probation officials. And then I meet some new charges with graffiti and some fires from demonstrations happened in summer, before I was jailed.
Fires?
Like fines, yeah.
Oh, fines.
Yes, sorry.
It's okay. Just wanted to just like confess here some fires from demonstration.
No, fines.
F-I-N-E-S. Sorry.
Yeah, excuse me, fines. Yeah, some fines from demonstrations, which was happening in summer before I was taken in custody. This is my situation now.
Yeah, I think those numbers in Phoenix are a little bit tricky because, as Igor said, it's officially two different cases, but it comes in the same wave of repression. I would just like to correct, there was never six people in custody jail. It was in the beginning three, and then it was Igor plus one. So we talk about like Phoenix four, but then more people are accused and we're like, we shouldn't talk only about blah, blah. So now it's just Martin, who is the only one who is still in remand, but another seven people, Martin plus seven people pending trial with different charges. And Martin is like the last in prison. He, by the way, is vegan. He's got very bad conditions. He stopped to eat any prison food since the beginning of this year because he doesn't get any vegan food from the prison, although they behave illegally. This is like how paradox is that prisons and police are not following laws. However, so now he eats only food being brought by us and other groups like the supporters, and he keeps still fighting for his right to get fed properly by the prison. And he's got many special conditions which make his stay behind bars even harder. Like, he can't go play football with the others, he can't join different social things in prison, and being bullied emotionally and mentally. And that's like the typical way how the repressive apparatus work when they need to break someone to get more information or the whole concession, because the Operation Phoenix doesn't play out very well so far, and it doesn't seem that good for the police. Like, it's not as obvious as they thought it was gonna be, and you know, it takes time, and more people see that it's just bullshit. And so they try to like break him this way to get some confession.
Is Martin in solitary confinement?
He was for quite a bit, but now he's been like, his roommates or cellmates have been changing pretty often. And sometimes, since he's accused of this thing about the train with military equipment, there was somebody who was talking a lot about his mother working on Ministry of Defense, and actually being, by the way, the one who's planning the logistic of trains and something. Like, this person obviously wasn't caught because he was, according to Martin, out of his mind, but he was probably, you know, former drug dealer or somebody who prepares drugs. And, you know, police often offers these people, like, hey, you can have it much easier for yourself if you're gonna help us a little bit. But he was too obvious, and now he's got somebody who doesn't talk about military trends anymore, but he in cell talks to him about knowing some other activists and anarchists, although Martin never met him and we never heard of that person. So he would rather be alone, actually, at this point.
I wasn't aware that the infiltration would had got to that point of people trying to provoke from within a jail cell. Like, that's so... What forms of support have been the most useful to y'all in this case? You mentioned having to feed your comrades who were in prison because they weren't able to eat the food, but are there any other forms of support that people should keep in mind?
From my experience, the most effective way to support me was to send the food for me. Yeah, because like, to have some nice vegan food from your friends, like, well, usually eating some shit in prison. Like, by the way, I'm vegan and I was struggling for the vegan food in prison, but I was not successful that much. So, and his Black Cross and my friends were sending money to me on my like custody bail, so like I could buy some vegan things in the canteen. Yeah, and the most important part of support is moral support. It's very important to hear support from your comrades and to see it eventually. If for example, like here in Prague, we are doing like almost every month we are doing some support demonstrations, solidarity demonstrations near the jail where the Martin is imprisoned, and Martin always like hear the sounds of demonstration, and every time it's a big support for him, and like that supports him a lot.
Just wow, when Igor was locked up, it was much harder for him and for us to connect because he had special type of custody for all 3 months, so there was no way to go to visit. And first letters came something after 6 weeks or something, right? Because it went through like this special police department.
After a couple of weeks.
Yeah, maybe four. I don't know. I got first letter back maybe in 2.5 months from you. So it was even much harder than it's with Martin. But I think the most important is to show that we support them, you know, whatever the court or media say and what people follow, and do like the anarchist vision of solidarity instead of the mainstream narrative that we talk about already. And for us, it's important to give in prisoners space in our media and share their communication. And as Igor said, do the spontaneous actions, even small action with like, you know, good fireworks or loud music or loud voices is better than to try to make big, good-looking demonstration. And unfortunately, we still live in capitalism, so sending money is very important. And if anyone have a spare dollar, crown, ruble, or whatever else, just send it to Czech Anarchist Black Cross. And staying in touch and writing letters and going for visits, that's all great. And as Martin said, that helps a lot. Also, what's really important is not just to support, but to prevent these situations and informing public and people from our circles how to be more conscious about possibility of entrapment and police, and but how not to get paralyzed by paranoia at the same time. You know, how to be like healthy in our environment, but still be even more active and strike back.
Definitely. Infiltration has been used so heavily in Operation Phoenix, and this is not any kind of new scenario, but is a terrible and a horrifying scenario when it does happen. Yeah, it's such a funny thing. It's such a, because you want to be welcoming and you want to not exclude people, if they're weird or if they're awkward or whatever, but you want to be careful about possible infiltrators. Has that been a discussion for anarchists in Prague? Like how to look out for infiltrators and the like?
Yeah, I think we try quite a lot to put big effort on it. We also, sometimes it's easier to just get inspired by somebody who went through this, and especially our comrades in USA, as you said, have been like terrible experiences with such stuff. So what we did as well, we translated the bounty hunters and child predators inside the FBI strategy put out by Kremfink, and wrote some our own analysis and zin and do some tips on a web page for people, and sometimes some presentations and stuff. And definitely as ABC, we want to do much more.
Definitely. what are some good resources for people wanting to keep up with this situation? You mentioned the Czech ABC. Is there a website for that?
Yeah, I think the best resource for this, what is happening right now in Czech Republic, since, by the way, ABC was taken down because police also confiscated a server where most of Czech anarchist groups were on. So that's something which we want to avoid for future.
It was a big point of some conflicts. Like, I think the main point of conflicts between anarchist group during the Phoenix.
Yeah, all of these who are still working are back on different servers right now, but it's sort of like, you know, waking up from the ashes.
Yeah.
But the best resource for what we're talking about, the repressions in Czech Republic, is the web of Anti-Phoenix, which is sort of like part of ABC or like group on its own connected to ABC, and it's on antiphoenix.noblogs.org. It's antiphoenix.noblogs.org.
Gotcha.
I would like to say that we really appreciate have like space in such a wonderful project, and that you definitely should keep doing what you're doing, because that's really important, and I think it gives a lot of great informations to people all over the world who can understand English.
Yeah. Thank you so much for those words, and thank you both so much for taking the time out of your schedules to come onto the show and to talk about your experiences and to break it down for us over here. I very much appreciate it. Very much.
Yeah, we should capture radio station next time.
Yeah.
You already did. That's really good.
Yeah,
and I think that's what's important on it as well. Not just to react and to support what's already f***ed up and react on it, but, you know, choose our time, our place, and our type of action,
make
how we want to do it.
Make our own things.
Yeah.
Making our own stuff.
Agreed.
Rather than, you know, to try to fix small things and fix this
f***ing
machine.
To have a world on our own terms sounds like a beautiful thing, and I think we can, and I think we will.
Fighting with solidarity from Prague.
Solidarity from Asheville.
Send a smoke signals to each other.
Well, thank you so much again, and
it was a pleasure.
Likewise. It was total pleasure. If there's any support that y'all need for in the future, just email me and we can broadcast it on the show.
Okay, we'll keep you updated, because
sounds
this
great.
Is definitely not over.
No, it is not over, and we can help each other.
Sure thing.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. We've been speaking with Igor and Sasha in Czech Republic about Operation Phoenix, which began in April 2015 when police started a targeted wave of repression against anarchists, anti-authoritarians, and animal liberation folks. We spoke about the anarchist response to that, how to combat negative media representation, and we touched on what it means to actually have solidarity within anarchist communities, also media weaponization. If you would like to contact these folks, learn more about what's going on, and to learn about how to give support to them, you can visit antiphoenix.noblogs.org. That's antiphoenix.noblogs.org. To take us out, we have Autark with What a Rough Beast, which is track 4 off their 2013 release, The Death of Actiacus. Thanks again to them for playing yesterday. Y'all were awesome.